Ahoy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, but you don't have the right microphone selected in Skype.
Oh, God.
Everything's changing. All of the technology, all of the hardware is broken.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's
That's the Joe I am used to in my ears.
nice having to reselect that every now and then, just to make sure that
Keep you on your toes.
because it hasn't changed at all, literally, in the last 45 minutes since I got off a Skype call with Scott. But yeah, sure, just
Scott?
change it.
Which Scott?
Scott McNulty.
Oh, there are too many Scots. I think we need a moratorium on Scots right now. There are too many
Which
Scots.
Scott did you think I was talking to?
I mean, I don't know. I'm self-centered, so probably Scott Williams or this other Scott that I was talking to a lot on my blog earlier today about Alexa Lutz.
I'm sure it was could have been them.
Could have been either of them.
Yeah. Um,
Or both of them
definitely.
at the same time, pretending to be one Scott.
Definitely.
Maybe they were harmonizing and making a voice that sounded like Scott McNulty, but it was actually these other two Scots conspiring together.
That's a possibility. It would be interesting that they knew exactly the same Star Trek things at the same time. And
They're probably working off a script.
yeah.
You're predictable enough that they could put a script together.
Sure. It's a script that responds to the things that I'm saying off the cuff.
Yeah. So you randomly tracked?
I randomly tracked. I don't know when it will be released, but
Hmm.
it exists, will exist. The quantum wave hasn't collapsed yet.
What is it? If you look at it, it changes whether it exists or not, whether the podcast is released.
I think that's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Yeah, Heisenberg Uncertainty Podcast.
But I didn't watch Breaking Bad. So anyway, the
I watched the end of it.
oh, you just wanted to get the good part.
It's very similar to my strategy for Game of Thrones.
Oh, so you watched the finale of Game of Thrones.
I watched the last two and a half.
Oh, good. Well, you get a real good taste of the show if you watch the last two and a half.
Yeah. No, the lady that was helping me with my back was very into it, and I was like, you know what, this will give me something to talk about while I'm awkwardly stretching in a room full of old people too.
I like that up till now, no one was able to persuade you, not even your wife. But
Oh, she's the reason I watched it. I
oh,
just,
okay.
I could have done something else with my time.
Okay. Well, that's yeah, that's let's not that's good we didn't air that grievance on an anniversary. But I haven't watched. I'm not current. I had been watching, but it's hard to watch a show.
You didn't finish it?
No, it's hard to watch a show when you can't watch it at the same time as somebody else, and I don't have much free time to watch things, except for, of course, this podcast.
Yeah, remember free time?
Oh man, I was just thinking about
Remember
that.
when we started this show and neither of us had jobs and we recorded at 1 in the afternoon on Mondays?
Can we go back to that? I mean, other
Could,
than not
yeah,
having money.
let's do that. Let's go back to staying at home, being in my incredibly spacious private home office here, where it's very quiet and peaceful. Albeit slightly warm, 76.8 degrees, 28% humidity right now.
75 in here, 35% humidity. It's a little dry.
Yeah, it's warm.
Yeah.
It's 88 outside, high of 97 today. It's getting there. It's getting hot outside. I got a cold mug with a cold Fruitlands in it right here with me.
It's nice to have
It's like
a
pineapple juice.
Corona Familiar. So it's here.
That as close as you could get to an island beer?
No, actually, it was in the fridge already. The closest you could get to an island beer is readily available at most grocery stores because Kona Brewing is not, in fact, a craft brewery. It is 32% owned by Anheuser-Busch InBev.
You said you didn't enjoy the Konas when you were there.
I was a little bummed.
You didn't like any of them?
Well, I liked. I like the Big Wave Golden Ale, but that's like just like a sort of a nothing beer. Like, there's nothing
Yeah, it's
special.
pretty standard.
Yeah, there's nothing special about it. There's no real character to it that makes it stand out of a crowd. If you asked me to identify what it was, if I was drinking it, I would not be able to. But it is, it's pleasant. It's a pleasant beer. And so I had it poolside a little. And so we went to...
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to have it.
Yeah, we went to Kona Brewing, the actual like location in Kona. I wanted to try the other stuff that you can't usually get at the grocery store. And I was thinking they'd have like some seasonal brews or something. And it's all very pre-programmed, as it turns out. There was a pineapple IPA called the Gold Cliff IPA, which only vaguely tasted like a pineapple was near it. And it wasn't aggressively IPA-like in terms of the hoppy bitterness that I don't like. It was more of the citrusy thing going on with the hops. I don't know how that all works, dry hopped or whatever. But that was fine. And then there was another one which had lemongrass in it, which was interesting. And I liked it because it had like a unique lemony herbal quality to it.
Those don't sound like things I want in a beer. Those sound like things I want in a cough drop.
No, it was really refreshing. Jason agrees with you, though, and he thought that it was disgusting. But he doesn't like lemongrass in general. But this...
A lot of times when they do the lemongrass in the soups and stuff, they can go a little overboard with it, but a touch is fine.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think it tasted overly strong of lemongrass, but it was noticeable that there was something else flavoring it. But the cocoa brown, or what was it? Cocoa something. Anyway, there's one that's like coconut porter, basically coconut ale. But it kind of had like a really vanilla-y flavor to it, more so than coconut. So I didn't really care for that. And then there was another one that was their black sand something something porter. And that one was supposed to have like coffee, hints of coffee. But it tasted like over roasted ash. So it's not necessarily something that I loved, and Jason had a similar feedback on the ones that he had selected, but you know, it is what it is. We should have just not gone to the town of Kona, unfortunately.
That's fine. The other one that I like is similar in its nondescripts, doesn't stick outedness, but the longboard is another good middle of the road one, which I've had a fair amount of as well. I think I like longboard better than Big Wave personally, but it doesn't matter. It's all just, you know, nicely decorative
fractionally
bottles.
A percentage of a difference between the two, I would say.
The Big Wave has maybe a little bit more flavor. What is that flavor? It's just beer flavor, probably.
Yeah. And then there's Wailua Wheat, which is supposed to have a hint of passion fruit in it. It doesn't.
Wheat and passion fruit, that sounds like a good combo.
Well, it is. I mean, wheat beers usually put citrus, and passion fruit has some of that acid, you know, so that works. But it's...
I don't like any of what you just said.
Acid?
Wheat and acid wheat? As a combination? No. I'm not a wheat beer person.
I like wheat beer, but I mean, I like a good wheat beer? I don't enjoy like the stuff that you can get at a baseball stadium. This is wheat beer, but
Blue Moon.
Yes, not so good. But it's you know, it's an acquired taste. I also have to be in the mood for something. I think on the more refreshing side.
I think that's my problem with the wheat beer is that no matter how good it is, you're gonna have an aftertaste like you ate rotten bread off the ground that you stole from a duck.
Which is interesting because you don't like sourdough.
I love sourdough. You don't like sourdough. I love sourdough. You do that, not me.
No, I don't know. I kind of agree with you. It can get that way with a lot of your Belgian Trappist stuff, where that gets a little farmhousey funky.
There's like a cross section of different types of beers that are almost like drinking salt water. Like the more you more of them you drink, the more parched you get, and the worse your mouth tastes afterward, and you just kind of like you need to stop and go have a Gatorade or something.
I don't agree 100% on that, but you know, to each their own. I mean, that's the whole reason why you go to the tasting thing. But yeah, like I said, I think Jason and I both came to the conclusion that actually visiting the town of Kona was not fun. and that our time might have been better spent just sitting at the pool. It was not a quaint little Hawaiian town. It was very tourist trappy encrusted.
When was the last time you were over in the part where we went for our honeymoon, the Waikiki area? That's basically just like Orange County with, you know, palm trees and coconuts and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the last time I was there was before your honeymoon. Jason and I went to visit my sister, who was staying with my brother-in-law in Waikiki, like near where your Hilton stay was. So we were right in that spot, basically. And there were throngs of people, to be sure, all over the place, and lots of shops that you can find on the mainland, so they're not that exciting.
I bought a tank top at an H&M.
Yeah, why'd you do that, Dan? Why you gotta do that?
I needed a tank top, and I didn't have one.
And nobody needs a tank top.
Well, you know, it was hot, and you know, wanted to get a little sun on the shoulders.
Ew.
I for the beach day type stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were there. It was like $9.
Yeah, because nothing looks classier than a big white stripe across your shoulders and over your the rest of you, and then just two red arms.
I don't get red. I brown mostly. I could walk around shirtless. No, I think my shirtless days are behind me unless I decide to start hitting the gym a lot harder.
Yeah, I don't tan, as we've established. I'm like porcelain white, but then if you expose me to sun, I just turn pink and then red and then redder and then it's not good.
I don't mean to laugh at your pain, but it amuses me.
No, but see, Jason tans, so he doesn't get it. And so he'll just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to put on some sunscreen and then just lay down on the thing and stuff. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be here under the umbrella with my dorky looking sun hat on, just trying not to get skin cancer. But that's all I can do.
I know I should wear suntan lotion. I just don't. Cause I never had to as a kid. Cause I just immediately turned brown. Now I get a little bit red on the neck and the shoulders if I spend too much time out in the sun mowing lawns or whatever the hell it is adults do these days. But, I don't do the suntan lotion. Although I suppose whatever the face lotion shit that I use every day is, it has some sort of SPF in it because they all do.
You have a face lotion?
It's very dry here. It's very, very dry here. I have been converted to a lotion person. I mean, you know, Amanda bathes in lotion because she's a lotion gal and has been her whole life. That's why she looks probably legitimately 10 years younger than me, even though she's older than I am.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know.
It's all about moisturizing.
Yeah. I don't even have to drink that much anymore to wake up and my hands feel like they're made out of concrete. It's not a fun feeling.
No. I'm all about hand lotions because that's not great. And also a chapstick, no matter how much I put on, like literally just put chapstick on every 10 minutes and my lips are still going to be chapped. I don't know what genetic horrible thing happened to make that happen. But, cause Los Angeles isn't even that dry, but, it was very nice being in Hawaii. It was humid, but pleasantly so for the most part because of the breeze. I got to snorkel with some manta rays.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was weird because we did a test run, basically. There's a hotel we stayed at, there was an activities rental thing where you could get stuff, get gear to go do activities. And so to test out snorkeling, because Jason had never done it and I hadn't done it since I was like 10, and it was in a pool in a YMCA in Tampa. So
that must be horrifying. What did you see? What did you see when you did that?
Well, not much, because the visibility was a little low. There's like a cove that's by the hotel, and then that kind of goes around to some rocks where there's a reef. A small reef, but like actual like coral and shit.
I meant in the pool in Florida.
Oh, no.
It's all just band-aids and toenails. And
ew.
Stuff.
No. Sir, this was a why. But it was, I don't know how to say it. It's when we went in the water, it was kind of like murky a little, I think because people had been playing around in this beachy part of it. And then you went around the corner and you saw like some of the coral and crap. And I started hyperventilating and my mask wasn't sealing and I was panicking and I had to get back to the shore. So I had a nice anxiety attack. Mm. My heart rate hit a good like 160 beats per minute.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, you almost always have a little bit of an anxiety attack when you first go underwater like that. But you know, you need somebody there to sort of calm you down.
Yeah, and this was also after the unfortunate incident in Maui where a guy was attacked by a shark about 150 yards off of the coast of Maui and died. And that was in the news. My mom made sure she sent it to me as a text message the day before we went snorkeling. But anyway, I was fine. I was just hyperventilating. And then I was worried about Jason because I couldn't see him because he went around the little corner thing at the cove. And so I was just waiting there for news of some horrible shark attack to have occurred. Of course, everything was fine because it's just like a freaking hotel and people are just out there snorkeling that are like 5 years old. And I was just a little baby. But Jason came back and he had used an underwater camera that we bought at Target because he's like, we should have an underwater camera for the manta ray thing. And I was like, okay, how much do you want to spend? And he said, I don't know. What's the cheapest one they got? And I was like, well, it's like rebranded Vivitar as Polaroid one is the cheapest one they have, but it doesn't even have like zoom or anything or stuff like it. That seems
so
bad.
You could have just got like a disposable film camera and put it in a Ziploc bag.
Well, I don't even think they have those anymore, but anyway, it was this Panasonic TS25 or whatever. And I was like, okay, so we'll get that one. And so I picked it up at the Target before we went on our trip and we brought it. And that was also part of the snorkel experience, is he was going to use it on a test run. And then he came back to the shore and he's like, I don't know if my photos came out really good. I can't really tell on the display. And of course it's cheap, so it has a terrible display. And I'm like, well, I have the SD card reader back in the room. We'll look at it later. And sure enough, we uploaded it and it looked terrible because the lighting was not good. And the water was a little murky, and Jason didn't know how to use the focus on it because the autofocus itself was not fantastic, and there seemed to be a bit of a lag. When you would push a button to take a photo, it would say, hey, maybe I'll take a photo. Thinking, okay, I'm going to take my photo now. And so then you'd end up with something far far after the thing had moved. And so he had a lot of blurry shots of a sea turtle because Honu, green sea turtles, like to rest on the lava rocks on that side of the hotel because they just want to get warm and stuff, nice and toasty in their little shells. And one of them was down there like eating some garbage off of a rock, and Jason took a photo of it and he didn't even realize it. And also in the photo was included the state fish of Hawaii, which I cannot pronounce. It has a very long name, but Jason didn't even notice it. Also, there was a person in the background, and he said there wasn't one when he came up to the surface. And I said, oh, no, it's a water ghost. And he was not happy, and then said that he thinks that maybe it must have been a ghost. And I said, no, that was a joke. not a serious thing, that there was an actual ghost in the water. But then I, of course, said maybe it was somebody that drowned horribly snorkeling and blah, 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 because I'm not that nice. And even though I'm the one who hyperventilated and had to get out of the water, that's the kind of thing that I say. But
you sound like you're a blast to go on trips with.
I'm super fun. And we went on the snorkel thing the next night where we got to the boat and we had a incredibly baked Captain Gentleman guy who was giving us sort of the rough rundown of, you're going to get on a boat and I'm going to drive the boat out there and we're going to see some manta rays. And then we had our like sort of gear and snorkeling guide guy who was also on the boat, and he was very laid back as well and very bro-like, which did not instill like a ton of confidence. No. Because I was like, is there an adult that's going to go on the boat with us at any point? Because we've got Lebowski and then like Matthew McConaughey over here. And so I'm just a little worried about, our situation, but it was fine. They took us on the boat out to, Garden Eel Cove. And at first I thought to myself, why is it called Garden Eel Cove? And they said, oh, because there's special garden eels that scuba divers went down there to see. But then they realized that manta rays like to come here. And I was thinking to myself, why not rename this cove? Because Garden Eel Cove is not especially lovely, but the whole thing was like you hopped out in your gear and floated around, and then at sunset, you would all gather around this surfboard that shined a light down that basically excited the phytoplankton in the water. And so then the manta rays would come and scoop up the phytoplankton. And they just have like a big mouth, and so they do like sort of a drive-by. But sometimes if there's a high concentration near the surface, they'll do a barrel roll where they come up towards you, then flip over backwards before they get to the surface and go back down again. And at first I heard that and it didn't seem very appealing to me, but then I was a little disappointed it didn't actually happen, because apparently there just wasn't that much going on for the manta rays this trip.
Oh boy.
But I did see a few of them. They're very large. I have one terrible piece of video from trying to shoot it. Jason didn't want to get like one of those waterproof things for our iPhones because he was worried we would lose our iPhones. And
yeah.
So then I ended up using this terrible camera, and I have a shaky shot of half of a manta ray by the time I actually got it framed up, and it disappeared out of frame. But I saw a few of them. They were neat. Live in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Experience the manta ray. Mm-hmm. Be there with the manta ray.
Be present
for
the manta ray.
Did you pet any of them?
You're not supposed to pet them. Because
you're not supposed to pet those ones?
No, because they have a protective mucus coating, and if you pet them, then they can develop infections, and parasites can get in there.
All right.
Yes. These are the rules, Dan. But if you were a scuba diver, and there were many scuba divers in this cove, then you probably got a better view, because they had like a big, huge box with lights on it that they put on the bottom of the cove floor, and that shone upwards. Like you could see it from the surface of the water, like how bright this thing was. And that was apparently, they referred to it as the campfire or whatever. And that was where they were all supposed to be circling, but because nobody wants to like stack up and wait there by that, then all of these companies that do these manta ray dives all have their own little like rigged up surfboard thing with lights on it that they float people out on in the periphery of that.
Seems fairly commercialized.
Very. But I mean, I was pleased with it. It was an experience.
Like, got my blurry manta ray shot for the Instagram and good to go.
Well, no, I mean, I honestly, the shots of things were not that good and not that interesting. And I'm not really disappointed that I didn't get better ones. I was just happy that I did the thing, because...
And you weren't eaten by a shark.
Oh, yes. Super happy about that part. Because the dive guide was like, oh, man, did you read about that in the news? That was so crazy. And it's like, that's not comforting me right now. And he's like, no, don't worry. There's like 300 people in this cove right now. Like, they're more afraid of you than you are of them. And I'm like, I don't really super 100% believe that. But I'm willing to believe that if something happened to me, there would at least be somebody else who would notice.
Or you just grab somebody that's close to you and put them between you and the shark. Yep.
Like Jason, but we got...
It's not particularly dignified, but, you live to fight another day.
Yeah, that's the important part. And then we got back on the boat, and it's freezing cold, and went back to shore. And then it started raining, and we had to find somewhere to eat, so we ate at the hotel bar in the rain. Just huddled inside, damp, cold, wet. But it was a good hamburger, because I was tired.
It's amazing how good food is when you're tired.
Yes. Mm. But you also had a wonderful experience yourself recently.
What did I do?
You celebrated your anniversary and you
posted
about that and how happy you were about all of your years of being married together and things.
Yeah. three-year anniversary just the other day.
There was a lot of seafood in that video you sent me.
So much seafood. We ate so much seafood. Mm-hmm. So there's a new place opened up in Scottsdale called Ocean 44, and it's not on 44th Street, but the parent restaurant Steak 44 that is on 44th Street is over there. So rather than come up with a better name like Ocean, I don't don't know, 72nd or whatever road it's technically nearest to. They just call it Ocean 44, but it was very good. We ate all of the sea creatures that were quite tasty. It was only slightly annoying because, like many restaurants, the tables are too close together. And being that it's a nice restaurant, the staff is very attentive. And while they were attending to the people next to us, he accidentally elbowed me in the side of the head, which was not ideal. But we got a second free dessert out of it. And I scored a very tasty key lime pie that was not, in fact, green. And that was nice.
It's not supposed to be green.
I know, as you have informed me.
It's supposed to be like a light yellow. Because if you ever look at lime juice, it's not green.
You're not green.
If you see a green key lime pie, it's something that somebody engineered because someone said to themselves, limes are green, so I'll make this pie green.
I mean, to be honest, I couldn't really tell you exactly what hue it was because it was very dark in there because it's a very hip restaurant that was playing. I can tell I'm the right age for this type of place now, too, because they were playing all of the music that I absolutely loved from, like, the 90s and the younger people who were terrible that were around us didn't seem to be as into it as I was, but that's fine.
Oh, so a lot of Limp Bizkit and Korn and 311?
No, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what it is right now because I was also drinking a lot of wine, but it was a good evening.
Yes. Look, we had a lot of lobsters in front of you guys.
Well, that was the view from the front door. The kitchen area. They got the big ice area.
The raw bar.
Yes, we had many things. Well, a few things from the raw bar and other things that were not. That's a very large king crab legs, which I think is probably my favorite seafood. Even though it's boring, all things considered. But when you get really good king crab legs, like, it's amazing.
I don't love king crab.
It's sweet and meaty and delicious, and you dunk it in all kinds of butter, and it's wonderful.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Although they were very sharp, and I have a couple of holes in my palm from breaking it in half.
Oops.
Yeah, they did their best to sort of, slice and perforate some of them, but I really got in there. I was really enjoying myself. I made a mess. I was wearing crab by the time the night was over.
Well, I had a lot of tuna. There was one instance where we had some Kona lobster fried rice. Now you might be asking yourself, what is a Kona lobster? And I'll tell you, it's lobster from Maine that gets on a plane, gets flown over to Kona, and then it hangs out in a little basket in the water.
Oh, see, so it's now locally sourced.
Now, after the plane flight,
it's no longer a Maine lobster because it had a summer abroad in Kona.
Yes, when I first heard the story about this, I was just like, that's not real. Like you can't get away with that. It's ridiculous.
This is where I would cite the You Look Nice Today bit where they basically talked about how they would import Chilean pears to San Francisco and then keep them there long enough for them to be artisanal farm-to-table pears, but you didn't hear that show.
No, but I've just heard you describe that joke to me.
Well, there was more to it. There was, I think there was, there were bananas.
Ah.
There were, I think there may have even been lobsters in that particular episode.
Oh, speaking of celebratory things, when we checked into our hotel, there was a...
Did you get a free cookie?
No, there was an ice bucket waiting with a bottle of California sparkling wine. Not a brand I recognized, of course, which is not a good sign. But then,
did the label just say California sparkling
no,
wine?
No, it was in very small print. There was something else on it. I think it started with a Y, like Yulapa or something. Anyway, Yulpa. It was not a top tier. But anyway, there was this bottle in ice and then two champagne flutes and a card that said, "Happy anniversary. This coupon is also good for one free dessert at Brown's restaurant." And I just looked at Jason and I said, "Did you put this in?" And he said, "Nope." And I said, "I didn't put this in." So then I had the awkward conversation of, do we call somebody? because maybe we got in the wrong room.
Return this as somebody else's anniversary sparkling wine?
And so we had an argument about who would actually place the phone call, and then I ended up doing it, and I talked to the very nice lady in the, I don't know, room service department. I wasn't sure even who to call on the phone
the
tree.
Concierge.
Yeah, and so I'm just like, we have a like a happy anniversary like bottle of champagne, but we, well, no, it's sparkling wine. We didn't order that or like put that in their note or anything for this reservation. And I think, you know, we might have somebody else's. And she's like, oh, well, do you want it? And I was like, oh, well, I guess, like, okay. Like, that'd be fine.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, and I was like, I just want to make sure it's not somebody else's that we're taking. And she's like, no, go ahead and enjoy. And I was like, okay. So I got off the phone, and we're just like, shrug, oh, well. And so we had the half of the bottle of the sparkling wine and decided we didn't actually think it was worth drinking the rest of it. And we left it in the thing for the maid to take, and Jason flipped the flutes upside down in it. And then the maid the next day took the ice bucket and the flutes, but left the half-warm open bottle of sparkling wine there. And I was just like, I don't think she got the message on this one.
You must have been at a very touristy hotel where better safe than sorry. You don't want to take somebody's, you know, half-empty warm bottle of sparkling wine that they're saving for later.
I think downturned flutes in the ice bucket is the universal sign of no more of this. But
it is, but you know, there's going to be one time out of 100 where somebody wanted to save that and it gets taken away, and then, you know, they yell at the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't want to have that conversation.
No. But yeah, that was an interesting experience. But then, no. Fortunately, nobody else like greeted us anywhere with happy anniversary or anything like that. So we think we just got like assigned to this room at the last minute, and it was meant for somebody else's anniversary, and that hopefully that other person got it.
Did you say it was in the room already?
It was in the room already.
Oh, that's...
And it there was condensation on the outside. Like, it wasn't just placed there. Like, a lot of the ice had melted. It had been there a while.
I wonder if they just, like, totally missed the delivery for whoever was in that room before you, and it was supposed to be, like, a nice thing that just never showed up, because room service is always incredibly slow.
I don't know. Well, it was kind of funny. When we were checking out, there was a guy with a cart full of the wine buckets with ice in them and flutes and everything, and then underneath like fruit trays and stuff, and he was just wheeling this giant cart through the like breezeway that connected it to the main lobby, and I'm just looking at Jason and I'm just like, was that all just like everyone's anniversaries that are just going on? Do they do it to everybody? Like,
I mean, it's you know, it's Hawaii. You got a lot of anniversaries and birthdays and celebratory events. So you gotta come prepared. You gotta have a lot of champagne buckets.
Yeah, better safe than sorry. But overall, pleasant, enjoyable experience.
Yeah, and I'm sure you had plenty of time to get home and decompress and relax and sort of ease back into your schedule.
No, I didn't do any of those things, because I had foolishly decided that I would record a podcast for The Dark Knight on Wednesday, and I was going to do it from Jason's place, and so I had my laptop and my microphone there already from before the trip, and I set it up to record, and then that conversation went on a little longer than expected, and I got a little bit of an earful about how careless it was of me to not estimate the time better and to have gone on talking about nonsense in there for so long.
I get that from time to time too. Mm-hmm. But it's on things like that, there's other people and you can't really just go like, I'm done.
No, it was,
if it's just you and me, I can say thank you, good night, and hang up on you and we'll be fine. Can't really hang up on a panel.
No. And it was to the point where I was sending messages like, oh, are we going to wrap up soon? Like, you guys feeling it? Nobody was replying, and it was in Zoom, so I was sure like 90% of the people probably didn't even see the message. But it all wrapped up fine. And then I got to my place this morning to record a podcast with Micah, because what's better than a podcast the night before than a podcast the morning of, and then two more podcasts that same day?
What is the matter with you?
I don't know. I guess I just like overestimated like how easy my week back would be, because I arrived and my Wi-Fi wasn't working, and I looked at my Wi-Fi router, my Airport Extreme base station wireless N 802.11n whatever, and the light wasn't on it at all. Not even like a not connected to the internet, not on, like a not on light. It was like it's plugged in, and I picked it up, and it was making a little noise, and I was like, "That's not good." So I unplugged it.
What would be making that noise? It doesn't have like a spinning disk hard drive in it.
No,
does it?
No, it's not a time capsule model. So I don't know what it was, but I was like, "Whatever it is, something broke."
Yours is the tall boy model, right?
No, the flat one.
Oh, you got the even older one.
Yeah,
okay, sure.
Yeah,
I got a tall boy. Mine's still working, but it's I think it's a little too far away and getting a little overwhelmed that from time to time it takes a good 30 seconds for my my home app to recognize all of the lights that are turned on, that, so I can then turn them back off.
Yeah, this was a problem for me today, because I had kind of planned on riding this thing into the ground, because I don't like the big tall one, and it doesn't make any sense to buy the big tall one, because I was like, I'll just wait this generation out, and the next generation I'll like. And then that didn't happen, because they just continued making these. And so I was left with the unfortunate situation today of scrambling to try and figure out what my solution would be. Because I looked a while ago when my Wi-Fi was a little flaky from like a bad firmware update. It resolved itself. But I looked a little while ago and I was like, oh no, these are all hideous. And what am I going to do? And then sure enough, when it dies, then I'm looking at the list of options again, and I'm like, oh no, these are all hideous. What am I going to do?
They look like Alienware PCs, basically.
Oh, they're so disgusting. And one of the really unfortunate things about it is, like, there are some that aren't that unpleasant to look at, necessarily, where they don't have all of the sharp, pointy edges. They're not like, they're not like, you know, stealth airships or anything. Like, there are some where they're just, like, sort of pleasingly not that gross. And
yeah, like the one that I sent you. I told you the one that they gave me when I got my internet set up. It's not that bad. It's just a little bit of a weird trapezoid thing, kind of tilted a little bit.
Oh, they don't sell that one anymore. They sell it as a cable modem plus router thing.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah. And I'm not interested in purchasing a cable modem and router replacement, because then if that dies, then I got nothing. So I want to have the separate cable modem just so I have the Ethernet as a fallback. And so today, at lunch, and my lunch I took at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because I was just so worried about what to do that I kept researching all day in between my tasks at work. And I finally settled on, well, there's just no other way around it. Like, either I spend $300 on a mesh network that is completely unnecessary for a one-bedroom apartment, or I buy something that's super hideously ugly. And there wasn't really a good in-between on that. The Synology options and the Asus options and the TP-Link options and Netgear, like, they all look relatively similar in terms of how gross and disgusting they are. Now, there are some that don't look as bad, but those are because they're the cheap, underpowered models that don't have good antennas and don't have Ethernet ports on the back, or as many Ethernet ports as I would like. Because I also have a couple of things that I need to connect. Like, I don't need my Apple TV to be on Wi-Fi. It's just clutters up wireless networking for no reason, because I have a cable modem, so my modem is next to wherever the TV would be anyways. And I have...
Plus, you got to get that fast streaming for your 4K content.
Well, I don't have that, but someday. So I was just like, I need four ports on the back of this stupid thing, and I need it to have like modern connectivity, because it doesn't make any sense to invest in something that's ancient and decayed already, like buying a used airport or something like that, or buying an unopened airport, which you can still do on Amazon, but that's not advisable. And
I forget what's our standard now. Is it AG? Are we still on AG? Is that a thing?
No, I forgot what it is.
We were on N, and then I thought AG came after that.
It's AC.
I don't know what it is. AC. Yeah. That's what I meant. AC. I haven't bought a Wi-Fi router in 5 years, 6 years.
I think the next one after that is AX or something. I don't know.
Why do we need two letters? What happened to the one letter? We didn't use all the letters.
They ran out of good letters.
Premium top tier letters.
Well, what's also weird is like you get into it and you start to realize like it's not just those letters. There's like how many antennas does it have? Like what bands do those antennas operate on? Because you can get a dual band. A router that has two antennas. You can get a tri-band router that has three antennas, and it doesn't necessarily map to the number of things you see on the outside of the box, because a lot of these you'll see a lot of little spiky antenna things hanging off, but that's not the actual like antennas. And then you'll see like the number of radio things it has, and the like whether it's a MIMO or whatever. Like there's so much garbage that is like put into the descriptions of these things that make them impossible to compare quickly and concisely, because there is no like look at this number and it maps across all of them. And they tried to do that with some other number called the AC number. And so for a long time I was like, is that the model number? Why do all these things have similar model numbers across all these different companies? And it was supposed to be like a speed rating, but the speed rating was BS. And I didn't even know that, but I finally read the Wirecutter thing, and it's like, this is the one. And I'm like, but this is the one I hate because it looks the worst. And
did you get the Wirecutter one?
Well, here's the thing. I said, I know better than you, Wirecutter. I'm not going to get the one that you recommend, the R7000P. I'm going to get the R7000. You know why? Because it's $149 at Best Buy right now, and the R7000 is $219, and I am not going to spend that on this ugly piece of crap. Especially since we know that the next version of Wi-Fi is right around the corner, so if I don't even like this thing, which it turns out will be very likely, and I will want to replace it with something else, then it will feel silly to have invested upwards of $200 in it. So I went with the thing that was on sale. So it is the lower thing from what the Wirecutter recommends. It has most of the same features, but not exactly the same features. Like it's missing the MIMO thing, and it has dual band instead of tri-band.
What's a MIMO?
That's like a thing where it can talk to multiple devices on different and wait, no, talk to the same device on multiple antennas at the same time or something. According to the Wirecutter's review, like, devices, there are plenty of routers that support it, but not a lot of client devices like your phone, etc. The words they use were rarer than hen's teeth. So I was like, well, I'm not going to invest heavily in that again, because this is an older standard that is going to be replaced soon anyways. So I'm not going to spend the extra, you know, $90 basically to get to the tier that has that. I'll just save that up for the next go around on this garbage. But
honestly, it's fine because I think the Wirecutter has kind of turned into like a double turns out kind of thing these days, where it's hip to get the not thing that the Wirecutter recommended. You get close, and then you do your own thing. You say, I know better than you, Wirecutter. And you just do whatever you wanted to do.
Well, it's useful for having information, because honestly, I wouldn't have known any of these things about the standards and whatever, because that's all completely opaque to you. Like, if you go to Amazon's Wi-Fi router section or Best Buy or whatever, and you're looking at these listings, nothing...
Well, you got to go into the Best Buy store and ask one of the people in the blue shirts.
Because they're going to...
Haven't you seen their TV commercials? They're the experts in things.
They're just going to steer me to whatever it is that they get a commission on. So I don't want to talk to them. Also, I don't really
still work on commission.
Fully believe that they are experts, but sorry if there anyone who is listening is a Best Buy expert.
I mean, I've seen their TV commercials. They claim to know lots of things.
People claim lots of stuff. Like when I was checking out, and they asked me if I would like to sign up for a credit card, and I said no.
They still do that.
Yes.
Oh boy.
And the lady even said, there's going to be a blue button, and the blue button was accept to sign up for the credit card. And I'm like, are you crazy? I'm not going to push that.
They're trying to gamify your credit card application?
Yeah, I don't need to apply to a Best Buy credit
card. Push the blue button.
Yeah, and so when the receipt printed out, I made extra sure that it doesn't say, like, congratulations on your new Best Buy credit card. But that was a fun experience. And I also got another thing I realized this morning is that I didn't have a way to connect to Ethernet provided by my cable modem, because my laptop, made by Apple Computer of Cupertino, California, does not include an Ethernet port, because that would make the laptop too thick.
You didn't get a dingus?
I didn't, because why would I need it? Because my router is great.
I got a dingus from the IT people from a touch bar that it's from a brand name that I've never heard before, but it's got three USB-A's on it, an Ethernet dingus, another USB-C on the other side, and then like something else on it. And then it lights up when you plug it in. It says like HopSport or some dumb crap on it.
Yeah, I didn't want to do it. Because also, when you're at Best Buy, the brands you have to deal with are something called J5 and Insignia. And I was like, I'm not plugging those things in. And so I went with the Belkin Ethernet adapter, because as you know, Apple does not make one. I plugged that in and used that for my thing with Scott, because I knew that I wouldn't have enough time to set up the router. And when I was doing it this morning with Micah, I plugged in my 2011 MacBook Pro to the Ethernet and had to renew my lease on my DHCP settings and restart my cable modem in order to get it to see it. And then my machine kernel panicked.
Nice.
And I was like, this is a good sign. And I Skyped with him afterwards, after it updated, and I logged into Skype again. Afterwards, I said, you know, it's probably not a good idea to plan on doing this for the rest of the day for two more things, which is why I got the Belkin, and which is why I got the router. Both of which, safety measures. All safety measures. So now, if something happens that isn't my apartment burning down, I should still be able to have a podcast in the event of an emergency.
You should backblaze everything so it's safe. Oh,
that's not going to help with my network.
Hutu. Hutu, and it lights up. I found it. How much does this thing cost? $40.
Wow, it's really lavishing you with expensive gear.
It's got an HDMI port on it too.
Ooh.
So like this thing, it's metal too. So it's fun too, because it comes with, oh, it's an SD card reader. It comes with a big sticker on the top that says if you plug stuff into all of it, it's going to get warm. Don't freak out. It's like, okay, thanks. Actually, this doesn't look like the right one, because this doesn't have the Ethernet on the end.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hutu.
I feel like there's one company that makes all of these.
Yeah.
And they just put different branding on them. Because there's like a similar one from, I think, Anker and everyone else, and the Insignia one kind of looks similar.
Oh, yeah, it's right up there in the top there. In the top bar of the Amazon, it says similar products, and it's got the Anker one. It's just like SSD enclosures. It's all the same crap inside.
Yeah, I don't know. And, but with this router, the exciting thing is it has an app. And
good.
Yeah, the app means you can stare at a display that says, wait 2 minutes for your mobile device to reconnect after you change, like, literally any setting. It is super inefficient and bad, and I kind of wish I had just started doing the setup process with the web portal instead. But that's just like a life lesson for me, I suppose. It did update the firmware.
Oh.
I did put passwords on it. It has a separate admin password from the thing password. There's a toggle that's off by default, which sets up a 2.4 gigahertz network and a 5 gigahertz network. But if you flip the toggle, then it makes them seem like they're one, and it does load balancing between them.
Oh, that would be nice.
Yeah.
I don't think I have that, do I?
I don't know why that's not on by default. I don't get it.
I talked to Mr. Sargent about this, and he said 5 gigahertz is actually, it turns out, and 2.4 actually works better for a lot of HomeKit stuff. Because I was bemoaning the fact that when I set up my my socket deals, my Wemos, I set them up on the 2.4 or something because it was easier, faster. I forget why I did it. And I said, I don't want to, I'm groaning at the thought of moving them all over to the 5 gigahertz. And he said, no, you don't want to do that. And here's why. And I totally forgot why. But it would be nice if it just like figured it out on its own.
Yeah, I forget. There's something about range, but also the amount of devices that are on it and the bandwidth that gets used. It's nice to not have to worry about it. Anyway, I'm hoping it's fine. Also, what I found out from Jason Snell is that apparently several of these antennas that you screw into the back don't need to be screwed in unless you really need the range that it provides. And since I have such a small apartment, I'm currently experimenting with not screwing those in, because then it's less hideous. It's just flat, sort of a flat black trapezoid.
It just kind of looks like a Roomba from the Jetsons.
It's really ugly. But, you know, it was either that or I spend a ton of money. Also, the Orbi is much bigger in person than you think it is. They had them at Best Buy there as well. And it's basically like if you took this Netgear and then put it on its side and then wrapped the whole thing in another layer of white plastic to make it round.
This thing
is much bigger than those photos make you think.
Looks like a bug zapper.
Yeah, well, I thought it was going to be like more airport extreme sized and not as big and huge as it is, but it is rather large.
Like that molecule thing, the air purifier that they strategically placed like way in the distance next to a couch for forced perspective to make it look like it's not so tall.
Oh, I haven't really paid close attention to that because I heard the price and then I said, nope.
Oh, yeah. It's legitimately like 3.5 feet tall and like a foot in diameter. It's huge.
Well, you know, people should get their money's worth.
Yeah, you gotta purify that air. Mm-hmm. Oh, but when you were talking about web portals and passwords, you just reminded me. My mom got hacked.
Oh, no.
The other day. Somebody hacked into her Amazon and bought a bunch of drones and stuff or something, and they locked her account and figured it out or whatever, and she had to go reset all her passwords. But then she assumed it was connected. The next day, she got a call from somebody saying they need to run some diagnostics on her IP address. They left a voicemail, and she called him back. And he said, okay, when you get home, let me know. We'll run some diagnostics on your IP. And then he called back like a half hour later, like, you home yet? She's like, no, I'm still at work. I'm like, okay, go home so we can run some diagnostics on your IP. I'm like, for the love of God, please don't. She's like, I think he said he was from Amazon, but then he said Microsoft was going to run some diagnostics. I'm like, Jesus Christ, how much information did you give this person? She's like, no, I didn't do it. I called you first. I'm like, this is not real. People don't call you. Mm. Companies do not call you. They especially don't call you proactively for your security. But she's like, oh yeah, you know, I changed my Amazon password and I changed a couple other passwords because that one was compromised. And my mom, God love her, who bought 1Password about 6 years ago and has never used it, uses the same password for everything. And I'm like, you need to change all of your passwords. She's like, no, I had changed the important ones. I'm like, you don't understand. Somebody could just reset all of your new passwords with your other stuff because it's still all compromised because now they have your phone number. They have your name. They have your password. They can just guess and see how many places they can get in, and you're going to get hosed. And she's like, all right, okay, I guess I'll go do that. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically my theory about what happened with my Netflix is it had been a very old compromised password because even when you're careful with this stuff, like companies are not. And so I think in one of the hacks, like Adobe or something like that, that password had gone out, but I had reset the stuff and I'd forgotten that it was the same password. And so then somebody got into my Netflix, deleted everything, reset my account, watched Boss Baby TV show episodes, and I had to reset the thing. What was weird was they did it again the 2 days later. And I'm like, this is really strange. And they're like, oh, well, check your email and make sure it's not compromised. And I'm like, well, nobody's doing anything with my email, but I reset that anyways. And it had a unique password. So I didn't even understand what was going on there, but I turned on two-factor and all this other stuff. And I was just like,
I was going to say, is Netflix one of those apps that's kind of like OAuth that like, even if you change the password, it still kind of stays logged in until you go in and say like deauthorize all devices.
Yeah, but I had done that step. So maybe there's some loophole where it doesn't fully deauthorize things or something.
Or somebody was offline at the time that you deauthorized and they were able to get in and hit reset again before it happened.
Yeah, I'm not entirely clear. Because they didn't actually change stuff the second time they did it. So it didn't really seem like they had like a fruitful endeavor on the second time. They just changed the password basically before I did it. Like the first time they like changed the account name and avatars and deleted Jason's account and all the other accounts. And I was just like, well, that's bad. But yeah, it's unfortunate dealing with these things. And so I was very paranoid about setting up this Netgear and making sure that there's a separate admin password from the password that's used to log onto the network, because a lot of services will helpfully store your Wi-Fi credentials offline, like Amazon. And I'm like, you know, that's probably bad.
They'll do what?
Like Amazon, if you have an Amazon device, they'll store your Wi-Fi credentials. Oh, so if you get a new Amazon device, it just joins your network automatically and you don't have to go through that hoop, which is a nice thing. It makes your life easier, but at the same time, it's like, well,
now you're making me wonder if somebody bought an Amazon device after they hacked my mom's Amazon account that is going to be pre-linked to her account. Like they bought an Echo that they're going to just hook up and start ordering stuff with their voice.
Well, that's not going to work because it's linked to the linking part that comes preloaded is the Wi-Fi credential stuff. So they'd have to like go to your mom's house to use the Wi-Fi.
Well, sometimes they come preloaded with your Amazon credentials too, don't they?
No, you still have to enter your password for the stuff. It has your account preloaded, so you can sign in easily, and it'll be like preloaded for you. But it's not like signed in where somebody picks it up and they can use it. Anyway, setting lots of separate things, lots of long password strings and stuff, and storing it in places that are safe. Doing all that good stuff. So hopefully everything will be fine. Not that I'm paranoid about Netgear or anything, but I don't know.
They've been around forever. They haven't fully gotten, their reputation tarnished with massive weaknesses. I mean, no more so than anyone else, at least.
Well, there was one time that, like, some list of the pre-configured device names and passwords confiscated or leaked or something. Somebody found it on the dark web. I don't know. And
I mean, most routers have like the password printed on the side of them.
Yeah, no, but that's the problem is like if someone's still using those, then you just boop, pop right in and you can use that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even the default name, I have family members who were like, oh yeah, my Wi-Fi is the one called such and such, and that's what it was when they installed it, and the password is what they gave me, and it's like, you need to change all of that. You can't, don't use the default name, don't use the default password. I know it's easy to just, look, we're on the internet now, but like, don't do that.
Yeah, no, this is all not using any default anything. But still.
Don't hack me.
No, don't hack me, bro.
Info security. I just set up so many new things in 1Password, and somebody was looking over my shoulder when I autofilled, and like it showed all like 65 or 50 or whatever the whole asterisks it maxed out at in password, and they're like, Jesus, your password's that long? I'm like, why wouldn't it be that long? Tell me the disadvantage to making it as long as I could possibly make it. Even websites that are terrible. I just turned the slider down. Did it take that? Nope. Turn the slider down a little bit. Did it take that? Yep, good. That's how long it's going to be.
Yeah. Well, there are some where if you have to enter it manually, it's better to use the word thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just use the show in big type on my phone, and then I just do it once and then save it. I got some new computers now, so I can touch ID things. I can unlock stuff with my watch again. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a magical world. Although, I locked my iMac and then started walking away to like leave for the day, and then I felt a tap on my watch and it said Mac unlocked, and I turned around and looked across the room and it's like unlocked again. It's like nope, let's not do that. Mac, lock it again.
Well, it's a little easier with the laptop because you close it and
yeah. But now there's the two. Although one thing that is actually quite magical that I didn't realize until just like a day ago is the iMacs with the USB-C and the touch bars with the USB-C, you can just get a USB-C cable and plug it into the iMac and plug it into the laptop, and then you don't need a power brick anymore because it charges.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
These modern computers got some stuff. Although, here's a real hot take for you. Keyboard on that touch bar Mac is hot garbage.
Yes.
It's so unpleasant to use. And then the trackpad is huge, which is nice, but the clickingness is terrible.
Yes. Well,
it's real bad.
I have... Is yours the refresh that just happened, or was it the one before?
It is not the refresh from, like, Monday or whatever.
Okay. Well, see, then we have the same model. Because I have the 15 inch with the same trackpad and same keyboard, membrane, whatever thing, that version. And I don't enjoy typing on it. I really don't like it at all. I haven't had the issues of keys not working or doing double key presses or any of that stuff. So I haven't had a reason to take it into Apple to get anything replaced or looked at or any of that. And I haven't had any mechanical faults with it. But even in prime operation, unpleasant to use. And
it really is.
I know that you have told me that you like the touch bar.
That's only because I customized the hell out of it. I put a lock screen button on my touch bar, which I thought was pretty nice. I set it to show my my expanded function keys all the time. You know, the showing the app shortcuts is neat and all, but I don't really have much of a use for that. And I think I turned on, what do? I hold down like function or whatever, and it shows me the app controls instead of like having them there primarily all the time. But what I really like is the brightness slider and the volume slider. Like, I don't want to hit volume up, volume down buttons. I just want to put my finger down and slide left and right. And I think I really like that for the brightness and the volume. That's that, and then being able to customize it are the two things I really liked.
Wait, you can? Oh,
yeah. By default, it comes with brightness up and down and a brightness slider, but you can take those out. And the cool thing is, when you put your finger down on the brightness or the volume slider, you don't have to like tap it to expand it and then go to wherever it popped up. You can just put your finger down on it and then slide left and right, and you'll see the interface go up and down wherever it may be, but you just put your finger and slide it.
Okay.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I did not know that it did that, and I just tried it out. But I don't like that it's not under my finger.
Yeah, it's a little weird, but like if you're just like, oh, there's the brightness button, you put your finger there and you just, I mean, because all I really ever want to do is turn the brightness all the way up and then like slightly adjust the volume from time to time. But
yeah, well, what bugs me is like I would just want to do like a notch down or a notch up, especially with the volume. And So it's like you can't do that easily. Also, it still shows you the like the notch view on the screen anyways as you're doing it. So it's like, who's this helping? Like, isn't the whole point that it's on the other screen?
Yeah. I mean,
computers.
I was primarily using it with I got a Magic Keyboard with number pad dealing a bob. And I have Keyboard Maestro'd the bejesus out of it already, just doing all the great things with the customization, including adding what is it? F13 and 14 are iTunes volume up and down. So like I can easily balance out like music. And then if I have to like hear something else easily, like, cause I sometimes, spoiler, I don't stop my music to listen to an edit point, when I'm doing some stuff.
Damn.
So I'll just turn the iTunes down a little bit so I can hear both, just so I know for timing purposes. Like, I just want to know if an edit hits on a beat or whatever. That's all I need to know.
Mm-hmm. I guess. I have never worked in an environment where I'm listening on the same device as I'm working. And usually when I'm working, it's not with audio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I was like that for a little while. But then AirPods on computers are fine. But I have learned that Adobe Premiere does not work well with Bluetooth headphones.
Oh, no.
In fact, it does the opposite of that. It took me a little while to figure out how to turn the microphone off so it stops getting all tinny, but then it's just crackly and stuttery, and I was like, what is the matter with you? This laptop handles it fine, iTunes handles it fine, but as soon as you open Premiere, it's like, no, I don't understand how Bluetooth audio works.
It's also bad in Audition. I don't know if you've experienced this when you've edited some of the episodes of the podcast.
I have not tried AirPods at home because typically I either have my headphones or I have very loud speakers, so I don't have to do that.
Because it's not using the system audio. So if you connect to your Bluetooth headphones, you still have to open the preferences and select those Bluetooth headphones. Also, if you connect a new audio device, it'll prompt you if the app is already open that you should open the audio hardware.
Yeah, your settings have changed. Do you want to see the thing? It's like... No, I don't most of the time, and until you do, because sometimes Premiere, you'll connect the headphones and Premiere will just not play anything until you open the preferences and then just literally close them again. It's like, ah, finally audio. It's like, great.
Yeah.
good work.
Also, another annoying thing is, like, if you start with Bluetooth, and then let's say I close the laptop and take it with me somewhere, and I put headphones in, and I open it back up again, it's like there's no audio hardware. And I'm like, that's not the case. Like, the operating system itself is smart enough to realize that I have plugged in headphones and that it can play audio over those headphones. But you, Adobe Audition, are not that smart. And you have to go in and manually reset it. And sometimes it'll be like you hit the playhead and then no audio is coming out. And you're like, well, that's not good. And so you close the app and you open it back up again and it's working. And you're just like, what the F was wrong? Like,
no, you don't have to close it. Just open your preferences and close it again. But sometimes I'll open the preferences and then hit the little menu and then just reselect the same audio that was already coming out. But it's stupid. It's real dumb. And I know this is a problem. Like, I don't know what the solution would be or like what it would look like. But when I'm sitting around two computers and an iPhone that all have like historical connections to my AirPods, when I take them out of the thing and put them in, like, I don't know what I expect to happen in terms of which device they pair to, but it never gets right. And I always have to open a Bluetooth preferences drop down in my menu bar and go like, all right, connect over here, disconnect over there. And then it connects. And then I have to make sure it's listed in the volume thing there. And it's like, all right, now I can do work. And this is very annoying, but I've stopped doing that. I brought my big headphones into work so I can put them on and, ignore everyone and pretend I can't hear anybody, which is quite nice.
Well, I had a similar experience the other day. I was listening to something and somebody walked up behind me and apparently said my name three times and I didn't hear them. And I'm just wearing the little Beats X things. So I was just like, oh, maybe this was too loud right now. And
No. Let's create a nice seal. And I like things loud. I like it loud enough to not be able to hear people because you can kind of get in the zone.
Yeah. Well, you see,
as best you can.
The audio mix on some things, like maybe The Dark Knight, is not great for just like writing it at one volume level.
I think the filmmaker would disagree with me.
Well, he can send me an email about it.
I haven't listened to your thing yet.
Wait till the edited episode comes out. For members who don't know this, we have bootlegs on the Incomparable of episodes that are captured live and then put out there for you to consume that are unedited or not majorly edited. Usually just like here's two audio tracks that are like maybe compressed or something. But anyway, that happens and it's called a bootleg. And the Incomparable main episode show does that. And we do that for Defocused every week. And so there is a bootleg that's out there that is 2 hours and 30 minutes of us talking about The Dark Knight, I think. And maybe you want to wait for the edited one, where it'll be a little more polished, concise. Nobody will be talking over anybody. But some of the juicy bits will be on the cutting room floor, I'm sure. But
I don't know. I got a long commute. Yeah. Maybe I'll find time. No, I won't find time for it. I still got a backlog of stuff.
Yeah, not for 2.5 hours. Just wait till the. I'm sure Jason Snell is going to get it down to like an hour 45 or something. He's very ruthless with his editing cuts.
As he should be. Mm-hmm. Cut out everything Joe said.
Yeah, but we see the fun thing is, for listeners. Dan, you're Dan.
Which one am I?
Yeah, you're Dan. So Dan and I are not ruthless with our edited cuts. Jason's the ruthless one.
I do some things from time to time. Mm. I'll take out a thing that I said was stupid.
Yeah, well, I don't take out things people say so much as I take out like maybe weird ums and ahs or like missed starts of sentences or something. And usually that's very seldom. I enjoy the natural flow of conversation that occurs.
Oh, we're very natural.
Yeah. Also, sometimes I'm just busy.
So busy.
But
I wish I had a Tesla with the automatic mode so I could edit podcasts on my very long drive home.
I don't think you should do that legally.
I shouldn't. Yeah. But you know, I would be way more productive if I could do literally anything other than clutch and gas my way for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you should start lobbying Arizona to expand a train line from Ahwatukee to the center of town, and then another train that can run up to Scottsdale.
Well, they got one from the center of town, center of Phoenix, to the center of Tempe, to the center of Mesa. All places I don't really go.
It seems like a useless train.
I mean, if you're a college student at ASU's main campus and you want to go to ASU's downtown campus, great. Or if you want to go to Mesa and get robbed, great. Great. I mean, there's the cider place in Mesa now, so you can go there and get drunk and then get robbed.
I take it that Mesa is not an incredibly safe neighborhood to be in.
Mesa's fine. Mesa is the last place that is holding on to the late 60s, early 70s. It's still probably 70% untouched. You know, you got your mobile park homes, you got your auto repair shops, you've got your random fenced-in dirt lots full of disused construction equipment kind of stuff. And then you got your stuff that's very near the light rail line, which is, you know, you got your hipster cider bars, you got your sandwich place that sells six types of sandwiches, you got your bird scooters and things, and then you move two streetlights down, and then you know, you want to be in your car before the streetlights turn on, kind of thing.
Mm.
It's very weird. It's very large. Mesa is incredibly large and sprawling, and it has just managed to somehow. I mean, it's never had much of a downtown, but it's managed to avoid modernization. I don't even want to say gentrification. It's just managed to avoid modernization, basically, at all costs.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to go buy some industrial plant and or animal feed? Like, that's your place.
Not really in the market at the moment.
Yeah.
But that does remind me. I was on my drive home. I was driving on Oxnard, which is a lovely name. I was driving on Oxnard, and I was noticing there are so many automotive repair facilities, like one after the other, just like up next to each other, all along the street. And I'm just like thinking to myself, how does anyone know to like shop for these places to take their cars to? How do they like get customers? But they all seem to have like full lots of like cars in disrepair. And it's just like, is this just like some sort of like front where people just like have the same car in disrepair, and then they do some other business on the side or something? Because it doesn't really seem viable to have like a bunch of independently owned like auto repair shops just all lined up one next to each other.
I think, and I, you know, I couldn't confirm this because of who I am, but I feel like there is a large percentage of the population that when something happens to their car that they don't particularly care about, they take it to the place that's closest to them or that they've seen before. And they just say, can you fix this for me? Rather than researching who people are, where they are, who's the best one to tackle this, are they going to scam me? It's just like, oh, I live over here, and or my car died in front of this place, and we can just kind of push it in here. And it's like, let me know when it's done, and I'll come back.
Yeah, but
yeah, there's a lot of auto repair places that look like they could use a substantial amount of repair before they're in the place to do anything to other people's cars. They're still there.
Yeah, but what's weird is they're all next to each other. So,
oh yeah, they all specialize. You know, you get your German one, you got your Honda one. Mm-hmm. You know,
specialize. I don't know. It's a very odd neighborhood to drive through. But mm-hmm. then I got to drive through a lovely canyon, which is never not fun.
Canyons. Scenic route.
Scenic route. Yeah. It's very scenic, especially if you're going behind somebody who's like, you know what, 25 is just too fast for this 30-mile-per-hour zone. I'm going to just slow it down to 22. That's the kind of thing you want in your life, just for no reason.
Nope. The thing I want on my commute is I want people to go as fast as they are safely able to go, and then go 5 miles an hour faster. No. And then everyone's happy.
Just stopped earlier in that sentence. Yeah, there are people who at high speeds are not good. So maybe that person who was going 22 miles per hour in front of me, what they were safe and comfortable with, and that was all that I could have or should have expected of them.
No,
there's no like sticker to warn me or anything on the back of their car. Like, this car is run by somebody driven by somebody who's just like impossibly slow, but needs to be, you know, instead I'm just thinking like you could go like 3 miles per hour faster because you could, or maybe, maybe just reaching for the stars here, you could go that full, 8 miles per hour faster to get to what the speed limit is, of 30. But whatever,
if you don't go the speed limit, you're dead to me. I'll run you off the road. No, but the people who are really legitimately scary are you discover them when traffic on the freeway begins to open up a little bit, when everyone's already starting to go a little bit faster, and then they go fully 10 miles an hour faster than everyone, and they're swerving in and out. And in Arizona, those people are in very large trucks, and it's just like, this person has no regard for anyone. Like, they're changing lanes left and right and all over the place, and it's like, you are not getting that much further ahead, but you are just a danger to everyone.
Yeah, it was like some study in Germany that you don't actually get much further by speeding in traffic than somebody who's just going the speed limit, because
you may not.
Okay. That all that crazy lane switching and all that other stuff, you're going to wind up behind somebody who's slow anyways, and you're going to be stuck there.
Yeah.
So you might as well just enjoy the ride, for the most part. Now, there are exceptions, of course, to that rule, because sometimes you're just behind somebody who's just incomprehensibly driving poorly, and you just don't know that at the time. What's nice about having a tiny little Civic is that, and I'm sure you can relate with your car, is that...
Oh, very darty, yes.
Yeah, you can't see necessarily around like some big, huge SUV that's in front of you. Is this just a slow SUV? Or is there a line of cars in front of this SUV? And you have no way of knowing. And so that you merge over to the side and go around, and then you're like, oh, look, there's like 20 car lengths between this enormously slow SUV in the left lane and the next car that's in front of that. And they were just hanging back, having a good old chat on their phone, like literally up to their face. And you're like, I had no way of knowing that for my tiny car.
That's why you need some horsepower. You just hop over, you stomp on it for a second, then you're in front of them 5 seconds later, and you're good to go.
I'm not Batman. I don't need to drive like a maniac down the street. I want to drive a nice, orderly, calm, but efficient way down the street. I cannot stress efficiency is my ultimate goal.
Oh yeah, there are roads. Having lived in Ahwatukee for the vast majority of my life, the two main roads into the gigantic cul-de-sac that is where I live, I know exactly when you pass which storefront, which lane you're supposed to be in for maximum efficiency. It's like, you know, when you pass the Chipotle, you want to be in the center lane for a block and a half until you pass the Walgreens, and then you can get over to the right because the traffic that's going to slow down and turn into the Walgreens is gone, and then you can speed up. But then, you know, before you hit the the Dutch Brothers coffee, you need to be back at least in the center lane because you got the left-hand turn coming up, and everyone always likes to back up. Like, I've got that down to where I can do it blind, and it's always the most efficient route. But I don't have that yet for this long, long commute.
Yeah, it'll build over time.
Yeah,
because that's one of the other fun things is memorizing which ones are lights that have dedicated turn lanes, which ones are lights that don't, and which ones are lights that have turn lanes but don't have protected lefts, and which ones do. So it's all interesting. I had to put some...
Although, I don't really have to deal with that because my commute, despite being a very long distance and a long travel, I turn left and then I merge onto another freeway and then I turn left and then I turn right and then I'm there.
What are you complaining about?
It just takes a long time.
Dan.
Commuting.
You should live in Los Angeles. It would break you.
I worked there for a little while and commuted to places.
Yeah, but not on a steady basis. You had a an out. You had a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I also went to work late too because it was an office where people got to work at 10:30 or 11.
Yeah, no. I prefer to get in at 9. The official start time for the office is 9:30.
Oh, see, that's nice. I feel bad because I get in at 9-ish and I leave. I get in at like 9:10 and I leave at like 5:15, but my boss gets there at like 7:50 and leaves at 5:30. It's like, oh, I'm leaving now. And I shouldn't feel bad, but I do, because you're still here, and you were here when I got here.
That's weird. Yeah, no, I don't feel bad about leaving, really. I just don't, like, you know, I want to work these specific hours, and I want to clock in and do the things that I'm supposed to do. But I feel more comfortable if I start my day at 9 and I end it at 6. Now, technically, I could start my day at 9:30 and end at 6:30. That's the official start time and the official end time. But I prefer to be done at 6. So sometimes if I get in at 9:30, I still take a half hour lunch so that I can get out at 6.
It's a good strategy.
I just like to be out at 6. And what's crazy is that's the highest traffic, peak traffic, horrible time to be on the road. So you're not saving any time by being in the car.
You're just not in the office.
Yes. And you actually will have a shorter, faster commute if you stayed later.
Totally. But you don't want to do that.
But the commute into work is actually longer if you get in later, which is also annoying. So if you're working an 8-hour day, you ideally want to be in by 9 and out by 6 anyways, because there's no benefit to getting into work late because the traffic will be so bad getting there. Because you have to drive past UCLA, and UCLA is like an enormous vacuum cleaner that draws in all of the students and ruins everything, because there are no trains to UCLA, no light rail, nothing, just buses, and nobody wants to take the bus, so you get people and cars for miles just stacking up to make one little right turn off of the 405.
It's amazing.
It's pretty wild.
You should go the other direction. My dad used to, I think he got to work at 7 or 7:30, and he left at like 2 or 2:30. Like, that was his favorite thing in the world, was to get home from work like, I don't know, an hour and a half after lunch.
I don't think they would be that cool with me doing that, but I will occasionally go in earlier, like 8 or 8:30. If I know that I'm working a 10-hour day and I want to be out a little on the earlier side, but I don't usually do that when I'm working an 8-hour day, because then you get out like ridiculously early and it doesn't actually save you anything, because traffic technically to the valley is from the valley back to the west side is bad from the morning until about 5 o'clock. Then traffic's good from like 5 to 5:30, and then traffic starts getting bad again. I don't know why.
That's very weird.
Yeah, because there were a couple days where I've gotten out of work earlier, and it's just been like I'm sitting in more traffic now than I would have sat in had I like worked a full day and gone home at 6.
Yeah, you know, I've seen that too. Like 1 or 2 o'clock, it's real bad, and then 3 eases up a little bit, and then like 3:30 and 4, it just gets slammed again all the way until like 7.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I blame everyone, and we should have better public transit if the only reason is that those other people can be off the road, and then I don't...
Well, we should just work from home permanently or just be independently wealthy and not have to go to jobs.
Both of those would be good.
Yeah.
Do you want to start a lottery pool in our podcast?
We should take... the next money we get from this podcast, we'll pool it together, we will buy lottery tickets, and we will split whatever we win, which will be nothing, but we could do it.
Counter proposal. I was not that serious. That seems like a waste of money.
Oh, it sounds like a challenge. We'll make a big thing out of it.
Yeah.
We'll let the listeners pick some of the numbers that we choose.
No, that sounds even worse.
Not all of them, just some of them. We don't want them to pick, like, you know, 5 ones or whatever.
Challenge each other. Challenge math. No, I don't think.
Can't challenge math. Math is a constant. Well, not all of it's a constant, but, like, it includes constants.
Yeah. Well, there's...
Numbers are constant.
Imaginary numbers aren't. Are they? Wait.
I mean, yeah, they're always the same.
Yeah, it's the inverse square... The square root of negative one.
Square root of negative one, yeah. Yeah. That's an imaginary. Which one's E? That's like the 2.7 something,
it's
right?
It's energy, right?
No, lowercase e. It's an imaginary number. It's an irrational number. 2.71 off to infinity or some crap. I forget.
Sure. To infinity
Everyone
and beyond.
Everyone remembers pi. Nobody remembers e. Who will speak for the e's?
It's I got it.
That's why I was chuckling, Dan.
Well, you didn't answer.
Well, I'm not speaking for the ease.
Your time is up.
Also, when you say ease, it just reminds me of that weed delivery service.
It was a weed delivery service called Ease?
Yeah, E-A-Z-E. Did I ever tell you about the time I was at restaurant that is sort of an Israeli Middle Eastern thing that has like shakshuka and hummus and stuff? It's by the Lodge Bread guys, but they opened it up on Pico and La Cienega, basically. And so Jason and I are sitting there, and there's this other table that's sitting there, and there's a blonde lady who's been on her phone the entire time. And she's arguing with the Ease delivery driver and with her friend who's in an apartment about picking up her Ease delivery because she's eating around the corner and doesn't want to walk back to the apartment from there to get her weed delivery. But she apparently needed to be there in person, and she just didn't want to stop eating.
Seems like something that if it's important to you, you might want to just, you know, take a minute.
Yeah, I can't imagine being too busy for your delivery weed. That seems not like the thing that business is for. You know?
And it's like ordering the Lyft before you even get the check.
only a complete butthole would do that. But yeah.
not to generalize.
No, that's being very specific. That's I think it. We can get the check now.
Yeah, check please.
Yes.
Check. I'm doing the hand motion too.
Check 1, 2.
Mic check.